The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hashtag no music, no intro. That shit throws me off every time. God damn it, Zoom. We got our guy back on the show, Greg Rosenthal, 60% G, doesn't know what is, didn't get a stimulus. This man's just living the best life right now. Friend of the show, this is your third appearance on the Hashtag Safe Word podcast. We actually... Like, the last time you were on was, like, last year pre-pandemic. Like, it was pandemic. It was the pandemic because we started the show during the pandemic. It feels like it was longer than that. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I was one of your first guests, but now you waited till you just had, like, nothing to talk about.
Wow.
Like,
okay,
let's get Greg Becca.
Wow.
We don't know what we're going to talk about in early June. Get Rosenthal.
Man, tumbleweeds out here, man. Like, nothing.
Bro, I know I'm a football fan because, like, I was on Twitter very briefly today and I saw, like, some OTA observations and shit, and I, like, got a little excited. Like, I was like, and then it's sick. It's a sick.
Trevor Lawrence completing passes and shit.
Yeah, like, bro. I was like, ooh. How sick of me. Of course, Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com. Fixture of the Around the NFL podcast. This man just put out how many articles was it where you did the projected starter series for the NFC, AFC?
That was eight. One per division, 16,000 words or so.
Come on.
Man. And that's like that's the Rosenthal piece I wait on every year. It's like, okay, yeah. When did that motherfucker drop? Because I know it's gonna be some heat.
That's like that. I feel like I'm ready to go to the season. I'm not right, getting to OTAs. I'm like, I do want to read up on some of this stuff because you can learn some of it, but that's something where being old and having gone through this enough that I don't put anything into it. And I used to say I don't put anything into it, but I still would and like read it all and like and fall for some stuff. And now I just ignore any evaluation until camp starts. It doesn't matter.
Well, Sean Payton agrees with you because he was like, we ain't doing none of that shit.
Right. it all too, man. If some teams are choosing like, nope, we're not even going to do it. Like that tells you all you need to know.
So that series is amazing. And the thing I like about it as a Saints fan and even as just a general NFL fan is it kind of like refocuses like, okay, like, oh shit, this player went here. Oh shit, this player is like a starter. Yeah. And just completely like refocuses your thoughts around the league. I know that you guys went into depth about it today on the show. So I don't want to rehash everything, but I'll, we kind of hit this last time you were on the show. Like, what's the most, I don't know, the most surprising thing that that you took away when you, after you did the AFC, NFC, most surprising thing from a team that you were just like, damn, this is, didn't expect this.
Like, well, how the whole South just kind of looks trashy, the AFC South. It used to be like the worst division in football. And we sort of like make fun of it every year. I would try to like hope it would come up. And then it has been solid the last couple of years. But this year, man, like the Titans offense just they don't have anyone behind AJ Brown.
And no Arthur Smith, which is a huge factor with the talent too.
Right, and they don't have anyone at tight end, and their offensive line's okay. The defense actually looks good on paper, but Vrabel always takes a bunch of players that look good on paper, and it doesn't seem to work out much. And then the Colts seem like they took a step back on both sides of the ball. They lost defensive linemen, offensive linemen, and they got Carson Wentz, so that's a problem. You know, the Texans, you guys know about the Texans, but even just like kind of going through their roster is just comical. You're like, okay, so going into this week, they had you know, Mark Ingram's got to be down there being like, okay, I gotta beat out David Johnson. That's doable. Like they kept him because he had guaranteed money. And then, oh, what? You're bringing in Philip Lindsay? Come on, man. And then this week it's like,
Rex,
what?
You're
bringing in Rex Burkhead? It's like, you know that. You know these Easterby, you know, guy, he's got to be playing Rex Burkhead. Come on. They're like, yep, they're going to call down from the top and be like, yeah, you got to play Rex. That's just how we do things around here.
Even like the Texas wide receivers, it's Brandon Cooks, Chris Conley, Randall Cobb. It's just such a miss.
Yuck.
It's gross, bro.
It's gross. And the Jags actually kind of look fun on paper. And so, but I could see this whole team looking under 500. And I think Jags fans are understandably excited, thinking like, dang, we might pull off like a Washington football team, win the division with 8 wins or 7 wins or something.
Yeah. I could see them being kind of like the Chargers last year. Like if Trevor Lawrence is good, like, you know, like we expect, like, you know, it looks fun. It's fun to watch, but they don't win a lot of games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned the Chargers. They were kind of the other team that stuck out for bad reasons, because I'm ready to just ride the bandwagon here because I just love Herbert. But I don't know. The offensive line, everyone's like so focused on that, you know, fixing that. That'll fix everything. And it does look really good on paper, but that's unpredictable. And then you look
Joe
at like
Lombardi.
Right. Yeah, you got your boy Joe Lombardi. And then you look in the front seven other than Bosa, and you're thinking like, who else is good in this front seven? And they redid
Kenneth
their secondary.
Murray, like that.
Yeah, he looked pretty good late last season. That's fair. And then after Allen and Mike Williams, who are good, but you're when you start saying Mike Williams is going to be your Michael Thomas, I'm just thinking like he's not Michael Thomas, and they don't have a third receiver. You going to get into the Chargers? Come on, you basically live in San Diego now. I mean, I know they're not the San Diego Chargers now, Adam.
Am I going to like become a fan of the Chargers?
Well, you're down in Orange County. They're trying to be like the Orange County Chargers sometimes.
I mean, if someone said, hey, I have a game to go to the Chargers, would I go to it? Like, I would go to it just to see Justin Herbert play in person, because I think he's behind Mahomes, like, the best young quarterback in the league, and I don't think it's even close.
They're playing the Chiefs on a Thursday night or a Monday night. I forget what it was, but it was a standalone game. And I immediately told my editor, like, I want dibs on going to that game.
Hell yeah.
I want that one. Yeah, bro. But no, I am not, because I, as a Saints fan, I know what it is like to be a Saints fan, and I've seen the Charger, like, enough times, and so I'm good. Plus, like, I know Brandon Staley was great with the Rams, and I know he may potentially transform the defense, but – and this is like old hat, but like it just seemed like the wise thing to do would have paired Justin Herbert with an offensive minded coach, because we saw when he was in college what it was like when he was with the defensive minded coach. And Eric Bieniemy type of thing, but obviously that didn't happen. I think Brandon Staley showed that last year with the Rams, he did a great job, and maybe he can move those pieces around. But we've seen the Joe Lombardi led team before when he was in Detroit, and not enthused. Plus, like, you lost Hunter Henry, you replaced Hunter Henry with Jarrett Cook. Like, I don't know.
I want to hear Ryan, like, just tell me your thoughts on Jared Cook era.
Because
I tried to tell both of you, I swear I had this conversation at least with Adam. I was like, I'm telling you, man, there's gonna be moments where Jared, they're coming.
It just made sense, because I mean, how many teams has he been with? You know, and it's like, they give up for a reason. It's like something ain't right with the dude. It's just not right. Like, he's athletic and he makes plays. The dude, like last year, I mean, I don't, Nick O'Neill, anybody, you could read him. It was like, well, this is going to be the year. He came on last year towards it. And it's like, that's the story of Jared Cook. Like, he comes on strong that one year and you think like the next year is going to be it. But that dude, man, that dude is like so frustrating, man. It's like the mistakes he makes are like costly mistakes. It's like, why did you do that? You know, so I was happy to see him go, even though like the Saints don't have any tight ends.
He's like to me like tight end Gurley right now, which is right. Like he'll look good. He'll look fine, good enough for like 55 out of 60 plays. But there's like five plays every game that just kill
every
you.
Game. Just every kill game to kill you, like kill you. So I don't know. I'm happy to be gone with that, but. You know, Saints ain't got much else.
I was going to say, though, I don't know, man, how you feeling? I mean, the Saints were a team going through this that I didn't feel better about them after going through this.
No. But yeah, if you go through this roster, we really look at it as like, damn, this team has some holes. And it's like, I mean, what me and Adam have been talking about, you know, just the past couple of weeks is like, what exactly is the plan here? Like, what's the vision? Is it, hey, you know, we still have a Super Bowl caliber squad. Let's just do all we can and go win. Like, okay, if that's the plan, they haven't really shown that. But at the same time, they haven't really shown that they're just going to do like a roster reset.
But what else could they do? They're spending all their money. They're right. Trying. I think they're like the Patriots or like plenty of teams, which I think is the way to be, which is like they're always trying to win.
Yeah.
Now, they might be realistic that this isn't their best chance, but I think they're always thinking. I don't think they ever are trying to take a step back. That's for sure.
Sorry, I'm eating. I don't care who fucking knows it. I just got home like 30 minutes ago. I think they're banking on like these huge leaps from players that they drafted last year. And I think that's a very dangerous proposition because they're banking on Cesar Ruiz being good. They drafted him to play, they drafted a center to play, essentially play guard. Like originally they were going to put him at center and then move Eric McCoy to guard. And it was a pandemic season. And after like a couple of practices, Eric McCoy shut down Cesar Ruiz, and that didn't happen. So basically now they're just like, well, you're just a guard now. Because if you listen to Zach Strieff, you know, he pretty much was an assistant offensive line coach. Basically, he pretty much said that Eric McCoy ain't moving anywhere. So they're banking on Cesar Ruiz being good at guard, and last year was not that. They're banking on Adam Trautman, who caught 15 balls last year, taking a huge leap. And I love my Saints fans. they keep putting the same goddamn Adam Trautman clips on my timeline.
If I see that little gif one more time of him doing that little jerk route,
or him beating Devin White in that second Tampa Bay game, like so they're banking on him becoming like a full, you know, tight end one, and then let's not talk about Zach Bond, who they drafted in the third round, who they was an edge rusher in college. They moved him off ball. He didn't really play except for really on special teams, even when Alexander got hurt. So there's like these Marquez Callaway, Dante Harris, who's a third-year player. There's a lot of players, young players, that I think they're banking on to be good. And up to this point, we haven't seen it. So it's very unknown of what it's going to be.
Yeah, this is a weird time. I mean, I put Pete Werner in the starting lineup and Adebo just for the heck of it. It's like those guys have chances.
As of right now, you have to. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We were talking about like 10-7, but that, you know, that is my Jameis Winston and Kamara optimism and everything. Like, I'm probably being biased thinking they're 10-7 now that I'm looking at this thing.
That's if Jameis Winston, you know, we talked about it. Like if James, let's say James Winston has, you know, 30 touchdowns, you know, 14, 15 interceptions, you know, two fumbles, completing like 63-64%. You know, some big plays. You know, with Kamara and Mike Thomas, the defense, even though I expected to take a step back, it shouldn't be horrible. You know, I could, that's the optimistic, like 10-7. But there are some issues. Like it could go pretty bad, especially with Jameis Winston, because you just don't know. Like, I'm assuming he's gonna be the starter. I don't, you know.
I mean, we've seen it go pretty bad with Dennis Allen too. It's amazing.
That's what I'm saying.
I give Sean Payton credit for not firing him after they were like last in the league in points allowed back to back with him. That was a long time ago now, and he's still there getting it done. But yeah, I don't know. I like hearing you guys in this different Saints era. You're like angsty Adam and Ryan is fun.
I'm annoyed, man. I'm just so annoyed because it's like I don't see the vision. It's like I get it. This year was weird. Cap and all that shit. They were just stuck in a kind of a purgatory where they really just had to make do with what they could. So I get it, but it's like, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, do something. You know, I mean, go in.
It's the year after going all in. I mean, they've been going all in for like six years. So it's the year that they're eating their medicine a little bit, and the next year the cap goes up $30 million. They got some bad luck with the whole COVID and cap thing. Probably no team got hurt more than them and the Eagles.
Oh yeah,
they got $33 million in dead cap money. I don't know how that ranks. I gotta think that's top two or three, maybe number one. And I did see this stat that like no team that's top seven in dead money has like made the playoffs in a bunch of years. So
I mean, $30 million in dead cap though. That's all we for Saints, man. Like, we had 65, 70 million, you know what I'm saying? Dead money records over here. But it's like, look, they're trying to move up in the draft, in the top 10 to draft a cornerback. But then it's like, then they were trying to move up, they draft Mac Jones. I don't know, like, I don't know how true that was. I know Michael Lombardi was saying that. It's like, what are we doing here? It's like,
you know, according to Patriots reporters, Mac Jones is the truth. You know, Mac Jones is lighting up. Listen,
me and Adam already talked about it. I fully expect him to start for the Patriots this year. I don't know if week one or whatever, but he's going to play, bro. Like, he's going to play.
When we did a Mac Jones specific episode, you know, earlier in the draft process when his range was closer to like the end of round one. So both Ryan and I have watched extensive Matt Jones at Alabama film. So we are very well versed in Mac Jones. So everything that the beat reporters are reporting at Patriots, like if you watched him at Alabama extensively, it all aligns. It all makes sense because that's just who he is.
Mm. I'm rooting for Cam. I sort of had like a come to Jesus moment like one night, probably wasn't, you know, 100% sober or whatever. And I was just like, you know, what would be the best possible Patriots season like ever is Cam Newton sticking it to everyone. Even Patriots fans like would have to like not totally enjoy it. Cause they, all they did was dog him and want to get rid of him. And they were so mad when they brought him back, and I've loved Cam his whole career. And you know, I want them to win 13 games with Cam and just like stick it in there. Even stick it in the Patriots. Like Bill Belichick would love that. That's what he wants to do. But yeah. He might have to look at Mac Jones as the better option if Mac Jones gives him no option.
Right. Because it was like I was looking at like Tom Brady, early career Tom Brady, like 01 to 05 or whatever. And he was like, his average was like 26 touchdowns and 15 interceptions and like a 60% completion percentage, you know, just like baseline stats. You know, like he was not the driving force of the offense. Even though he was good, he was smart, he put the ball in the right place.
Clutch, he was not even – people – no, everyone forgets because I don't know why. I guess they weren't there or whatever. They weren't remembering. No one considered him a top five quarterback after he had won his third Super Bowl. Of course not as a rookie. I mean, or of course not in his first year. Like that was like that was different. He jumps in there. The defense is great. He's just trying to stay alive. But even after like 04, like that was where it started to turn, because he did come on late that year. But like people did not think he was a top five quarterback.
No, I remember the debates. Like, is Brady elite? Is he truly elite? Like Joe Flacco or some shit. Like, you know, it's crazy to look at now, but that's how it was. And I think like Mac Jones could be that, like be that just solid. And I know it's kind of like stereotypical, like, you know, Nick Saban quarterback, white guy, he's going to be solid and smart and this and that. And like, he got a lot of hate on Twitter. Just, I don't know. It was like, I don't like the stereotype of thing. And I'm like, but I mean, if you just watch him, that's what he is. Like he's, he has like a decent arm. It's not like he's like a dink and dunk guy. Like he's like a solid quarterback. I mean, he's not great, but he could. If you give him an offensive line, some decent weapons, he could be like just a good quarterback for you.
I'll never forget my creative writing teacher at Tulane. You know, was talking about stereotypes, and he said, you guys know that the stereotypes of what the Tulane students are, right? And I was like, when people were like, I don't know. And he's like that you guys are just like, you know, rich and, you know, unmotivated, spoiled kids. And he was like, and the thing you got to remember, stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason, like, because they're true. You know, there's a lot of truth to them. Yeah. I was like, whoa, he's coming with heat. But I always think of that. It's like, yeah, stereotypes are for a reason. Like those Alabama quarterbacks are solid and probably will do good if the situation is around them. You're right.
Exactly. It just is what it is. And that is the stereotype of Tulane.
I know. I didn't realize that at the moment. And I was like, oh, that's probably true.
What I will say is that
I was on a scholarship, though. I'm just putting that out there. At least, like,
damn, scholarship at Tulane.
Well, it wasn't full. It was like half.
Man, for tennis, right?
No, not for tennis. Please, they're like top 20 in the country. No, it was for academics.
I wanted to go there, man. I got the description like of the of tuition for Tulane, LSU, and Nicholls State. I just went with the cheapest. I was just like, well, not going to Tulane. Oh, and Dillard University also. And I was like, oh, not going to Dillard. LSU, I could have went to, but I was just like, everybody go to fucking LSU. I'm not going there. So I just went to Nicholls State.
Nice.
I mean, we talking about it. We got to hear some Greg New Orleans stories, Louisiana stories. Got to let them fly.
But you got anything specific, you know, question?
No.
You gotta learn these interviewers. You don't want to leave it too open-ended. It's just like, it's tough for people to just come up with some stuff.
That's a proper interview tactic. You take it where you want to take it.
I mean, you was living in the UPT. I mean, where were you living? What was your hell? You was on
Right around Tulane. I moved out of the dorms after freshman year, and then we were living on Ferret near Tulane, and then we were living on Broadway. We were living on Birth Street, all over the place.
Have you been down? When the last time you came to New Orleans?
For the playoff game when they beat the Panthers was the last time I was there. But I would be I went every year for almost like a decade after I graduated. I'm 42 now. And me and my wife went down there once and stayed for like 3 weeks. So I've spent a lot of time down there since I graduated, but not a ton lately. I went down for a couple Saints games, including, when they beat Cam. That was the last time I was there.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot, man. Like, it's just kind of funny. Like, the neighborhoods, you probably remember them. You're like, I wouldn't go there. It's like people riding their bikes in the bike lanes, and you know, urban farming and yoga classes, and it's like, what the fuck is going on?
I've seen a decent amount of that because two of my friends, my good friends from college, stayed, and one of them, like, you know, he buys he's like a, you know, what they used to call like a slumlord. He wouldn't say that, you know. That's how he started, at least. Like, he was doing that. He was doing that in college. I give him credit, but then he built it up. But he showed me around, and you're right. It's a different city. I love that city, though. I need to go back.
You gotta go for a Saints game. You gotta do it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a good story for you. I mean, they're all like,
well, you kind of told us about, like, was it who showed up at your place?
Oh, when yeah, Juvenile. Yeah,
we got here. Like, you told us, like, the back end when we were, like, wrapping up the pot. Like, you gotta give us, like, the full.
I mean, there wasn't too much to it. He just knocked on the door and he was looking for his girl, I think, or I don't think it was for, like, one of his friends. And he was just, like, asking for somewhere, like, no, she's not here. Right. And he was like, say, oh, man, what? I must
say, what?
And I was like, damn, we just saw royalty. This is amazing living here.
So I do.
Because that, living there at that time, though, I always say it was like living in Liverpool when the Beatles broke or something. Because I know it's like they're not the Beatles, but in terms of like the impact they were having in the city they were living in, they were the Beatles.
Oh, man, absolutely. I remember when I was working at Best Buy on the tech bench, and he came there and bought like five big screen TVs. This was before flat screen, like the big projector TVs. And he tried to pay with like a check and it got denied. He was like, nope, it didn't clear. And then he left and just came with like a big fucking wad of 20s. Like, I'd never seen that many 20s just like stacked up. And the dude, the guy, he was my manager. He was like, who's this guy? And I was like, it's fucking Juvenile, bro. He was like, you don't know who I am, huh? You don't know who I am. I was like, that's just weird, bro. And then he had us load his TVs on his, like, on the air, like three trucks out there. We loaded the TVs. Didn't give us, like, no tip or nothing. I was like, man, fuck you. It's my story.
I do have a question for Greg. As someone who's worked, covered the NFL as long as you have, ETF, Roto World, Brick by Brick, NFL.com, like, what excites you, what keeps you excited about football? Like, what brings you back? Like, we're in the, like, the complete deads of the offseason. What makes you excited to watch football this upcoming season?
It's a great question. I know how to manage like the times of the year better, just going through it all. So like, you know, I know to, you know, enjoy this time of year. It does not bother me that it's the quiet time of year. I know to like enjoy it. I'll be missing this part of the year. But it always just goes back to like why it's so simple. But for me, it's just like watching. That like I actually I'd never have, and I hope I don't get sick of watching the game, because it's, to me, it's always changing, and there's so much you don't know. There's so many people that know so much more about the X's and O's, and just trying to like stay on top of not just the rosters, because I love all that shit, and transactions and how teams are going and how news gets filtered through agents, and trying to like figure out how that's all working. But the game itself, like whenever I am in a spot where I'm not feeling something, like just go back to watching some Game Pass. Like right now I'm watching some Herbert, and I don't know what I'm going to use it for. I'm going to write about him at some point. It's like, and I still just love the game itself. So like going back and watching some Game Pass, or like getting all my ideas from watching the game itself, always kind of keeps me juiced. I feel lucky for that. Like sports does that in general. You know, I'm into the NBA this season. I'm into my French Open. I feel like the pandemic's made me back into sports more, just because it's like I can take my mind off stuff and it's relaxing to me.
No, I always like read your shit, because you knew about a lot of the players that most national media people just don't know about. Like I read national people all the time. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? You like, he hasn't even been good. Like, why would you say his name? Mm-hmm. Like, and you pretty much pick up, because you know you keep an eye on some of the local beat writers. You watch the film and all that shit. And I always love that you kind of you track like, I always want to hear what you got to say when anytime something leaks out, Adam Schefter tweets some shit, or, you know, I don't know, fucking Phil Yates or whoever, I don't know. And it's like, you ask the question, like, okay, why would this come out? Who, you know, who benefits from this, you know, coming out right now? And you kind of just break down what's really going on rather than just...
I love talking about that stuff on the podcast because you can't, like, tweet. Sometimes you can't tweet it all exactly because, you know, I'm guessing and you're kind of putting people that your colleagues with on blast a little bit. They get super sensitive. But Pro Football Talk was such an education for that. It really helped. It helped me out. And I already was like very much down that road because I, you know, what I do is was in a unique space was I was like reading all everyone's work. So I like knew them all through that. They wanted to get their name on RotoWorld. They wanted to get their name on PFT, but I wasn't like a threat to them. I'm not trying to break any stories. And most of those guys, they don't really follow all the other beat writers like that. You know, they follow their team. And even if it's Schefter, it's like he's not following all the, so they'll give you information. And then seeing how information came in and then came back out of PFD and people angling and oh man, it's dirty business. And it was just a lot of stuff. I was just like, okay, this is how it happens. And that's been good information to have since I left there.
No, it's great to hear your point of view from it, especially contract trade demands, you know, figuring out like why is this being leaked out, like, you know, when Ryan and I even talk about this podcast, we refer to you, like, even I believe it was like the Alvin Kamara situation, like the contract situation before the season last year, and like, oh, you know, Jocena Anderson reported that, you know, he may be, you know, the Saints may be open to trading him, and like all this stuff, and like untangling like the web of the business of NFL, because that in itself is a game in itself, just like there's a game on the field,
right? And so, and no one ever really totally knows. I always am texting like other, you know, inside, you know, I'm not an insider, but other people who kind of have that and trying to figure out what they think. And man, they're wrong so much. I mean, so am I, of course, but everyone is just kind of guessing. It's like when Julio went on Undisputed, like everyone was trying to figure out if he knew, if it was set up, whether like the agent and Shannon, like whether, you know, all that stuff. And that, yeah, I do find that stuff fun, man. I say he knew. I don't care what Pat McAfee said. I say he knew.
And, I think so too, man.
Shannon, here's why. Because if you say he didn't know, it's not giving Shannon enough credit. It's like he knew what he was sitting on. He's got a friend in Julio. He gives him a little heads up and Julio will be cool about it. Like he knew he was going to drop that.
Absolutely. I guess plus like what would Shannon gain by like destroying like that trust and that friendship? Like he gains nothing.
Right.
I don't know.
What do you guys do in your jobs to keep another thing, like keeping jobs fresh? This is more of like a bigger picture conversation, but I do find like, I feel like I need to be doing something a little bit different every couple years. Like it can't be doing the same stuff, and we've been lucky to do that. It's like our TV show, or like, you know, that's like a different avenue that we've gotten to go past, like getting out of management. Like I've never been able to like stick exactly in the same exact role for more than 2 or 3 years, or else I get like a little crazy.
Yeah, that three year time always ticking for me. Like
that's it.
I don't know what it is. 3 years. About three to four years. I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, I start looking on Indeed.com, looking at other jobs. Like, just fuck, man. I got to do something else. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just a worker, you know. I'm like, like, people
are doing this, though. You're doing
this. Yeah, I mean, this is what I like to do. But, like, my job is just like, I don't know. I don't hate it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the most I can say about it.
You got to get some sponsors here, man. Who?
Bro.
Some Saints fan out there listening to this. They're getting pretty good numbers here. You can sell some shit.
I'm just saying, we get our numbers nice, bro. Like,
if I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying.
You know, so, but
I told
you, Zaps. Come on,
big slap,
big shot, big shot or something. I don't know.
Manscaped. I don't care. Like, I don't. You know, we won't get suspended like Ian Woods. Like, come on, like we. are open for business. but to answer your question, I mean, I told this, I tweeted this. I am sorry if you guys hear that in the background. That's my crazy kitten going absolutely wild. is that I'm so blessed with my career that like 95% of the time when I wake up and go to work, like I love what I do. Like, don't get me wrong, my job is extremely stressful, extremely demanding, and takes a lot of time, you know, a lot of time, and it's very time consuming. But all in all, I love what I do. And I know that that's a blessing, because I've been in jobs and careers where like I couldn't stand it. Like, I hated going to work. And that is one of the worst feelings in the world, because that affects your mental health when you are in a situation where you can't stand your job and you have to wake up because you know you have to go to it because you have to pay bills. That is super, that like that makes, you know, makes a person feel depressed. So why are you on my back?
No, you got it good. No, that's a blessing.
Well, plus you make a difference. Like, you know, yeah. you're actually there, you know, that there's like medical or, you know, scientific studies done that like the clearest, like most proven way to help like depression is to do good things for other people, is to try to help others. Like, and that's like a scientific fact. That's basically your job. I'm out here like trying to make up jokes about Rex Burkhead, you know.
No, it's fulfilling. Like, fulfillment is different from happiness. Like,
right.
People like to say, "Oh, I just want to be happy." Like, no, happiness is a quick, spontaneous emotion that's usually relative to being sad or mad or whatever. But fulfillment is different. It's kind of long lasting and shit like that. So if you can get that from your job, like, you made it. Like, you cash that check every time, you know what I'm saying? And get paid for it? Like, come on.
Yeah, right. That's why we got to get Zaps in here. Get you guys paid for it. The spicy Cajun Crawtater one? But man, I would kill that. I would kill that in college. I would like go to, if I went to the Circle K and they didn't have that flavor, I would go to like a different one.
That's all they have. I'm in Alabama now. That's
yeah, they usually have it. Yeah, it's usually they got it.
That damn spicy Crawtater shit.
You don't like it? Oh, come on.
I like it. It was just like, damn, give me some different flavors, you know?
The voodoo. The voodoo's good.
Voodoo flavor, yeah. I wanted to ask you something that's been kind of on back to football a little bit. Lamar Jackson, I'm just so interested in how they handle his contract. I mean, obviously, MVP. Obviously, they built the whole offense around him. Playoffs every year. You know, got kind of the hump off his back last year. Won a playoff game. How do you handle that contract? Because you want him to be a better passer. Obviously, that's just the elephant in the room. Is it the skill positions that they put him around? They gave him some skill this year. So is it kind of going to be like a wait and see? Or he's going to be paid. He's going to get $40 million, $45 million a year. And you just figure it out from there.
Well, it sounds like he's negotiating his own contract. I mean, I'm sure he's getting some help. You know, his mom was his, you know, advisor, but I'm sure they're getting some, you know, legal help too, like a lawyer. But he sounded pretty confident in it. So that told me that they were along the way. And this is the time of year, not quite now, but you know, more like July, right before training camp, that big time quarterbacks usually get that first big contract. And I don't think it's not like they have any doubts about him. It's not like they're not playing around. There's, you know, you're right. Like, you got to figure out the right number. Do they want to make it? How guaranteed, how deep, all this stuff. But if he's negotiating it, you know, it's probably not going to have them over a barrel. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's fine. Yeah. I'm not going to like criticize some dude for taking a, you know, this big time guaranteed money and like criticize him for getting 80 guaranteed or, you know, 60 guaranteed when he could have had 80 or something. It's like, whatever, man. I don't feel like that's my place, but I think it's coming. I don't think they really have much. I think they're in it to win it with him. It's not like there's going to be any hesitation. It's going to be deep in guaranteed contract. And I think they think like I think, which is that he is a guy that should and will improve. He's not done improving. He's a really young player. And so that I think he'll be able to handle the transition from being like the best runner in the league by far to like just a great runner, which will happen eventually. And I think they're just going to have to believe in the process that he's going to keep getting better. And maybe he'll do without Greg Roman, you know, eventually, but that Lamar is not going anywhere. That'd be my guess. And I think because he's his own agent, if anything, they'll probably be like, all right, let's get this done now before
hire
someone else.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it's probably not a great idea, but who knows?
What's your biggest question going into the season? Any team, just biggest question you have, player, team, unit, defense, offense, coaching, what's your biggest question going into the season?
We already talked Herbert, because that's like what's closest to my heart, I think, in terms of just what I want to.
And he's white. That's progress, Greg. Love that.
Come on, man. I just like guys, entertain me. That's what I like. Tell the listeners your theory. Tell your listeners your theory. I mean,
it's not a theory that you have swirl tendencies when it comes to your quarterback, which is completely fine. You still are a Geno stan. You just spoke on eloquently of how you want Cam to have a 13 wins.
Him
and Dan pretty beefed out about Teddy. Like, damn.
We're not going to talk about that on this podcast, but we'll keep that in house because we have our theories.
I never really, you know, it wasn't something front of my mind until you keep making jokes about it. But I did think back, like Randall Cunningham, you know, I was a fan of the Patriots and I'm stuck with Hugh Millen and Steve Grogan and Flutie and all these garbage quarterbacks on garbage teams. And Randall Cunningham was coming up right when that was all happening. And so that was like the first, I was like, oh, you know what? There's other teams out there other than the Patriots. And so it's all about, like, to me, entertaining quarterbacks. And maybe I'm a little bit of a contrarian. And so maybe some of these black quarterbacks too were getting underrated. So it's like they need to get a little more credit. That said, your theory is also, you know, it's got holes in it. Tony Romo, he is up there in my all-time favorite quarterback. Jay Cutler was up there on my all-time favorite quarterbacks. And Philip Rivers is right there with anyone. So
were you an EJ Manuel fan?
No.
That's not a great quarterback.
He was boring. Boring. Like, put on a show for me. Rivers put on a show. He might not have been athletic, but he put on a show.
That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it. I'm not.
That was my way of buying some time for you.
Like, I'm sure you're still, even though this is a little, you're still like on the Tua bandwagon a little bit.
I wouldn't say I was on the bandwagon, but I do think he was put in such a tough spot, and he's such a specific type of quarterback.
What tough spot was he put in any different than like Justin Herbert?
His skill position players were as bad as any in the league that weren't the Patriots. It was Devontae Parker, and then like Mike Gesicki's is number two, and his number three is Jakeem Grant. Literally the number two wide receiver last year in Miami had 373 yards whatever Jakeem Grant had. In a trash offensive line with Chan Gailey calling plays and stuff. I mean, Fitzpatrick made it work and that made Tua look bad. But my thing with him is he's a specific type of quarterback that I think does not do well early, which is he's not like going to overwhelm you with his athleticism. If you need to win from the neck up, it's hard to win that way when you're a rookie. Like you can just be like Herbert and not really know what's going on and just like ball out. But Tua wasn't going to do that. He reminds me a little bit of Eli and Alex Smith, who were way worse as rookies, but bounce back pretty quick to being good. That's what I'm hoping. The offensive line was bad though last year. Come on. You have no hope for Tua just because he was bad as a rookie?
I'm not saying I don't have any hope. I'm just saying it looks grim at the moment. That's all. what I'm saying.
It's like, it was like eight or nine games.
I'm a little higher on Tua than Adam. Even though I did question where they were picking this year. Like, I don't know if you could have improved. I would have, but
I was amazed at the teams that really decided so far ahead of time. Like, nope, we're not going to consider Fields over.
That is, it's wild, man.
Over
that's,
Tua,
that shocked me.
Over Hurts, that was the biggest surprise to me.
Wild.
Yeah, and then even in Locke, you know, that was as big a surprise. I've got an answer. This gave me got me thinking of what the thing I'm most looking forward to, and answer your actual question, which is Trey Lance and the 49ers. Like him, you know, I love just I'm all about the quarterbacks and seeing a new guy come into the league. And man, he's such a mystery, and in an offense that's so much fun to watch with so many fun players around him. Ayuk is like weirdly underrated. He was so good last year.
Oh God, don't get me started on this.
And I kind of like Trey Sermon, this guy, the guy they drafted too. And it's like that. I'm very interested in that whole division. That division is awesome. It's stacked. All the division games are going to be awesome, but especially the 49ers. Like, are they going to be like the Super Bowl type of team? Because I think they could be.
Yeah, and you give Kyle Shanahan someone that can move like Trey Lance could. It's like
he hasn't had that since like RG3.
No, man, and you know him. He understands the math of the defense. Like, he will destroy defenses with that shit, bro. Like, I don't like it. Like, I don't like it at all just because I hate the 49ers. But from a pure football fan, I'm, like, so fascinated to see how that shit's going to work out. I mean, I don't want to watch Jimmy Garoppolo too long. Like, get Trey Lance out there, man. Like,
right. I'm assuming and hoping Lance is going to start week one if he looks good in camp. But that's a big if. We don't know. But I'm already thinking, you know, first week, you know, which games am I watching? They're in the early window. I know this against the Lions, and I'm like, that's a game I want to watch. I want to see Trey, you know, if it's Trey
that's
Lance.
A perfect game to start Trey Lance again.
Right, exactly. I'm like, I want to see Trey Lance. I'll be kind of curious for Jared Goff and just like what is going on the other side. But like, Trey Lance is box office. He's like Trey Young, you know. I hear all these people like Adam clowning on Trey Young. I'm like, are
Trey
you
Lance is
me?
Actually Trey Lance is actually likable. Okay. A huge difference.
I didn't watch a lot of Hawks this year, but I watched the whole series, and people clowning on him need to watch out. I mean, he is amazing. And I love that he makes everyone hate him. This is what we need more in sports, villains.
I love villains. Like, I love TOs, but like something about him just, maybe it's the baby hairs that's receding. It's like, bro, just like let it go. Like, his hair like just irks me. I don't know. It's just fun about him, but I can't stand him. I don't know what it is.
But he doesn't give a fuck. When he hit him with the bow, I was set for life. I already was such a big fan before that, but that was when I was like, okay, I'm just rooting for the Hawks now.
So we were talking about this earlier about jobs, and so a question I have been wanting to ask you that's kind of a deep question is, like, since you've done all this, right, you've done PFT, you've done Roto-World, you've been at NFL.com, like, what is Greg's end game? Like, what's that? Not saying, you know, no one's going to listen to this podcast from NFL, but, like, what are your eyes set on what you want to do in your career long term in the future?
Just stay in it. I mean, that was it to begin with. When I knew, like, within a 2 days of working at Roto, where I was just like, I'm just gonna try to do this for the rest of my life, and until I cannot, because this is fun and I'm gonna dive into it and just try to be as good as I can. And then the business keeps changing and everything, but it's not any easier to stay in it, you know. I don't think, I mean, things can go sideways, and I like that we're doing more live TV stuff. There's a juice that I get that, you know, that is fun out of that. We have an idea of something we're going to do for our TV show this year. So hopefully that happens. I'm excited about that. So it's doing that, expanding more and more of that. I would love to be in the situation of like reacting live when shit is happening and mixing it up a little more with the ex players and all that, and providing a little bit of a different, you know, voice than an ex player, and, you know, not coming at them, but, you know, being there and being a different voice, and kind of, yeah, I think there's value there. I love like Mina Kimes on ESPN, because she's not like an ex player or something. I think there's there's something to that, and I think there's good. It's good to see them like a her mix with the ex players, you know.
Nah, man, I would be rooting for that shit if you guys on like fucking, you know, NFL Sunday Morning with Rich and Richard and Mike and all that shit. Like I would be like, I would love to just see you guys get thrown in,
right? Or like the. Right, or like the free agent, like when free agency is happening, and I have done this like a little bit here, you know, but it's just like three minutes here, 3 minutes there. But like when stuff is really happening, that's when I like to write, and that's when I like would like to be on live, when it's like nothing's planned, nothing's too scripted, and you're just like, because that's what we're good at. That stuff is fun. So the more we can get of that. But man, it's also just trying to like stay employed. They're making cuts at the NFL. You know, it's,
I get it. Trust me, I know, man. It's
like this pandemic, they are, I think there's definitely a company wide, like, you know, tightening of the belts, which is happening. And it's just like, okay, let's just
gotta move into those, that new Inglewood office, bro. Gotta pay that lease.
Well, that's the thing, man. They have these crazy new offices that are gonna be awesome. But it's like, is it gonna be, they gonna totally be able to use it? I hope so, you know.
I shouldn't be laughing at that, but
I mean, that's just like sports media in general. It's been, you know, it's been nice that, because man, it is really hard to get paid to just like write on the internet these days. So it's nice that podcast came along and kind of saved us.
Oh man, the thing is, like podcasting, I wouldn't say it's young, but it's still like there's still like a lot of people that don't even know what a podcast is. Like they are like people like podcast. What's a podcast? So it's still like there's tons of growth, and you know, you mix that with video streaming and shit like that. Like there's like industry out there to be made.
Oh yeah, we've got our listenership. We gotta just, you know, hold on to it and grow it. And you're right, that thing, like that listenership, the around the NFL listenership is, you know, it's my retirement plan. Like,
you know, like bro. The shit y'all went through, I mean, y'all still going through with Chris, like that was different. I don't think I've ever experienced that, honestly, like with Chris passing, you know, rest in peace. But it was so different because y'all worked together, but y'all were friends. We all, like, even though you guys had y'all relationship, us as listeners, we kind of grew with you guys over the, you know, I've been listening to y'all since like 2012, and it's just kind of like, you know, it was just so weird just trying to absorb it and trying to analyze it and trying to, you know, understand how you feel about everything, because it's like, okay, I don't know these guys. I mean, I know, you know, I talked to you, but, and I've talked to Chris, but I don't know them. But it's still different than like, say, if you know, Kobe Bryant dying or something like that. Somebody, you know, you've never talked to in your life, but you was a fan of. It was different because you still kind of felt like a personal relationship in a certain type of way. Like when Chris passed, like I just went and looked through my DMs and just random conversations with me and him having about like the history of food or like like just weird random shit, not even football, just like,
that's awesome.
What we think about some 6th round pick drafted by the Falcons or some shit, like just the random stuff of just we have the DMs or just conversations on Twitter, and it was just like, man, like this is crazy, like this whole technology, the things it's created, like I don't even know how to take it as a human, you know.
And no, that's beautiful, because you know, I said something this last week thinking about the whole Naomi Osaka story, which I don't want to get into, but it was more about like that I think it's a generational thing, that people younger than me, like I'm 42, that their relationships and the feedback and everything that they have online is such a core part of their life. And to me, I said at least that like, I don't, consider those like online relationships necessarily like that meaningful, you know, if it's just online, you know, like it's because it's a generational thing. But you just kind of made me think that that's not really true, because like, because of what you just said about Chris and in podcasts, it's a little different than online, but it's connected. You're right. Like podcasts are a different sort of intimacy too, that you really do feel like, you know, that person. Yeah. And it was, it's obviously been brutal and tough, how to manage that. Cause everything was, it still is so connected. Going back to the office and the season, I think is going to be, its own challenge, because that's going to be like another time where it feels like he should be there. It happened at this time when we're all like a little, and I saw him quite a bit throughout the pandemic, but we were all separate and we were doing the shows separate.
Yeah.
But what you said is absolutely true. Like those DMs and stuff, like I know he thought you were hilarious, man. And those like, you know, stupid conversations about food and stuff, that shit is meaningful. So I sort of take back what I was thinking about, because it's different. Like it's a different sort of connection, and it's crazy that the listeners went through it, and we know they went through it in their own way with us.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, excuse me, but it's like, the way you guys just kind of, you know, just open yourself up over the podcast. I mean, you didn't have to do that shit. You could have took like a 2-month hiatus and like not post any podcast. Everybody would have understood, you know, but just to like, you know, kind of mourn him while covering football, like that shit, I was like, man, this is different. Like, I can't even explain it. It's not even about entertainment anymore. This has like reached some different level that I can't even really define.
Well, he was family. I knew how important he was as a person in my life, but he was, you know, just a really unique place in my life. I was thinking, like, there's almost no one I met, like, anyone else that is that close to me, that I consider that close to me, are people I knew when I was in college or before. I don't know if there's anyone else that came into my life since that had, you know, that it was that meaningful and he was that deep a dude. We're looking forward to celebrating him all too as a group later this summer. So that'll be nice.
Island, right?
I think that'll, yeah. So
that's dope as shit.
Yeah, that'll be the best way to honor him.
Well said. It's just I'll say this, like Chris passing, I had a good friend. You know, tragically lose a brother like a month or so ago. I think something as people and as friends that we can all just, I think all of us can kind of, and I think like we've known this, but you know, I had a death in the family, you know, like in last year, my grandfather passed away. I know Ryan had deaths throughout the pandemic. Is that this shit is so finite. Like life is just so finite. It's just so short. And this is something I talk about with Mark when I met him in person, is that like this isn't like a dress rehearsal, right? Like this is all we get. And to cherish the moments that we do have, you know, with friends, with loved ones, you know, do things, enjoy life, because we don't, like, this is it. Like, period. And anytime someone passes away that's extremely important to us, friend, family, it just kind of refocuses that lens of, you know, doing things that are important to us, spending time with people, and, you know, family and friends that are important to us, because we don't know when that can change. And so, I from us as men, from Ryan and I, you know, we send, you know, our condolences to, you know, to Chris's family and to you and to, you know, around the NFL podcast, or, you know, you guys have, you know, been going through it and you guys are pushing ahead, but obviously it never gets easier. And obviously it won't be, like you said, it won't be easy when the season starts either.
No, but you got me thinking, you know, that time period right after he passed, like having those sort of discussions as best as we could in the moment, I think was just informed by who Chris was, which was a guy that I had more meaning of life conversations, you know, with than just about anyone I ever knew. Now that, you know, maybe that was part of him getting sick the first time too. That was part of it, but man, I had a lot of deep ass and anyone that knows him would tell you they had a lot of those deep ass meaning of life. What does it all mean? Conversations way before he ever got sick the first time. So it wasn't just about that. It was about sort of who he was as a person, which was like a searcher and a talker, like a late night with a couple of beers, just having that deep ass conversation that just was like really natural. And in the way, Adam, you said, like sometimes when you lose someone, it refocuses you. Cancer the first time around refocused him in a way that was beautiful. Really, he was a beautiful guy beforehand, but there was something special even in the couple of years he was super healthy and living life to the fullest before he got sick again, and just being like part of that and being around that, and it was amazing.
And then dropped a beautiful seed on the earth, you know. Mm-hmm. Like that's just, so me, it's sad, but it's also amazing. And I just always chuckle at, I think the last podcast he did was him just shitting on Drew Brees in a playoff for his playoff performance against the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Hey, really?
I don't know if he's like, right. Not shitting on him, but like, I was like,
you're right. In my head, I like remember that it was us celebrating the Browns victory, which was a great
podcast moment.
But it wasn't. There was one more week after that, and that was him shitting on Drew Brees, which was fitting too. You know, he had been shitting on Drew Brees and for like two, three years now.
Like, this man can't get the ball downfield. I used to be so pissed. I'm like, damn.
He was just like, "Can't you see it? Can't you see?" I was like, "Yeah, I guess I can see it, but it's still kind of working, anyways." But he was right.
Yeah, he was right. Like, especially like last year, it was gone. It was like, and I just wanted the last football question. Like, do you think the Saints squandered their opportunity by like holding on to Brees this one last season, the 2020 season? Like, should they have just like shut the books down and said, you know what, Drew, we're moving on and go get Tom Brady or whoever they were going to get and just move on and kind of pull a Band-Aid early?
Well, I think they were ready to do it, as you guys obviously do too. That, you know, I do believe those stories that, you know, they were kind of, I felt like they had one foot out the door and was thinking he might be retiring last year. Yeah, I guess my answer would be yes. But they were, you know, that's so easy to say with hindsight. And it was a really tough spot. Like, just the, you know, sometimes life is all about timing, and sports can be like that too. Like, if you really break down the timeline of it all, man, they would have had to been decisive early that we are booting this dude to the curb, and they would have not have known what was around door number two. That's the reality. Uh-huh. They could have not known in that moment that they were going to definitely get Drew Brees, and the contract was all messed up with Brees, because they kind of were already, they were already kind of pot committed to this, like, we're going to ride this till it die, just with the nature of the 1 year, you know, add on fake 2 year contracts they had. So they were kind of already stuck, but it would have taken some brass balls to do it. That's for sure.
Yeah, it would have, because at that point it wouldn't have even been like, they had someone like Mahomes in the building, and then you could kind of like quietly push Drew out to another team, like, because they missed on that opportunity. But like, yeah, it would like, have.
Who
been
else would team. It have been? It would have been Brees. I guess it would have been. It would have had to be Brady. I guess it would have had to.
It would have to be Brady. Like that has essentially kind of have been confirmed, yeah, essentially, that if Drew hadn't came back, that Tom Brady probably would have signed the Saints. Oh, man.
Can you imagine Tom Brady just slicing up that Bucs defense? Like, that whole Todd Bowles assance would have never happened. We would have had Alvin Kamara for, like, 2,400 yards. People would...
People would be doing
the Benson, the Brady boogie. They would call it. They'd bring out the umbrella for the Brady boogie.
Bits are coming from out the grave. Like, oh man,
I'm just messing with you guys. I'm sorry.
No, it's hilarious. It doesn't affect me nor. The last I have for you is getting back to your projected starter series. You know, we got to tie it on. Give me a team from the NFC and a team from the AFC that upon going in, you felt better about them initially before you started the series. Don't give me, I'm going to say, but you can't give me anyone from the NFC East.
Although, you know what? The whole NFC East does look a little better. That was like where it all was.
I know. I read it last night.
Number one would be Denver. Man, I think if they had Aaron Rodgers, they could win a Super Bowl. But if they had like Matt Stafford, I think they could win a Super Bowl. I think I could be wrong. Of course. But I feel like that's a top two or three defensive roster. And it's pretty close on offense too. If they had a better quarterback, you know,
yeah, if Cortland Sutton is fully like 100% back, are we a little concerned that maybe like that one good season of Garrett Bowles was just kind of like
right? And the O line's got major question marks. They haven't been good. And yeah, you're right. Even the good part of it last year was Bowles is a question. So when O-line and quarterback are questions, like it's tough to call them a top five roster, but it's like everyone's got some sort of problems. Yeah. And if you, every other position to me is awesome. The defense is awesome. The wide receivers, Sutton, if assuming Sutton comes back and looks like the guy he was, I mean, talk about, you know, Wes could not have been higher on Cortland Sutton, was like a legit top five receiver. And I don't think he was too far off on that. Jerry Judy's nasty. Tim Patrick's
very underrated.
Is good. KJ Hamler could be better this year. Then you got Noah Fant, who is nasty. You got Albert O, who I really liked. He tore his ACL, but as a backup, you got Javonte Williams. You got Melvin Gordon. Like, that is nasty. And then the defense, I'm not going to go through it all, but I think it could be like the best defense in the entire NFL.
Yeah. They got corners. They got safeties.
But then Teddy
I don't want to talk about Teddy.
Drew Locke.
I don't want to keep talking about Teddy, but he does keep landing in these spots where he's got a chance. He's got a chance to do what he did with the Saints, I think, which is be in a good situation and win games with a good defense. Like, I do think their upside is a 12 or 13 win team, even with Teddy. Oof.
Oof.
There are 17 games, though, so that's like 12-5. Yeah, it's 12-5.
and NFC. Let's close it out with the team from the NFC.
That was better.
Like, you felt better about them before going into them, but no one from the NFC East.
Those were the teams. Those were the teams, to be honest. I mean, Atlanta's offense, that it's a little bit on Julio. Like, I think that could be a top five offense. And if you've got a top five offense, you got a chance to win double digit games. I don't care how trash their defense is. Like, maybe they could be like 24th or something. And then you could win even without Julio, they could be nasty, I think, on offense. None of the other teams, I think, honestly, would qualify in terms of like pleasant surprises. Like, we know, like, I knew San Francisco was going to be good. LA, Arizona, they're like a little worse, I think, than I.
Arizona's such a weird team, man.
Yeah.
They are such a weird. Missed, like, they're not as bad as the Texans, but like, they made these like all in moves, like JJ Watt and AJ Green, and
I don't know why you got it made me have to eliminate the NFC East, though. I mean, I think it's interesting that like the Giants could be a little frisky. I think the Eagles could be a little
frisky. Were frisky last season, though.
No, but better than that, like, you know, flipping the record around, or in Washington could be like legit good. It's
Washington is like almost like the Denver and NFC.
Yes, that's exactly right. I totally agree.
Like, damn, if they just get a quarterback. They
I mean, really you can say that about the Giants too, right? Like Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones should have a healthy Saquon. He has Kenny Galladay. He has Slayton, Shepard, my guy Tony, Evan Ingram, who's the most overrated player in the league, but at times he makes plays. Like, obviously, just like, you know, offensive line is an issue too, but like, Daniel Jones is a huge question mark. He's such a huge question mark.
Yeah, he's not like Drew Locke. I mean, he's not at like that level. You know, there are ways you could look at Daniel Jones if you like you squint your eyes a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you want to do for like a player that was picked like what 10th in the 10th overall or whatever the draft? Like, but he, quarterback.
He doesn't. I don't think he has the instincts, which is probably what's going to kill him, because he has the athleticism to be able to create. But it just doesn't seem like he totally has the instincts to like do it, because he does a lot of other things well. Like, his numbers when he's not pressured are pretty good. Like, they're like his PFF grades and other sort of advanced stats. Like, he was the second most pressured quarterback in the league. Part of that is he holds the ball, but like when he was protected and gets the ball out on time, like he was a legit, you know, NFL starter, good starter.
Anything else that you got, Ryan, for we?
No, man, let Greg go, man.
Greg go watch the Lakers season go up in flames. Who knows? It could change, but it's 20
Phoenix
right now.
Yeah, and
that
game's over, man.
This is giving me flashbacks to that Celtics-Cavs series when the Cavs just kind of like left in the middle of the third quarter of game 7. I don't know if you remember that.
Is that the game before LeBron went to Miami?
I think it was. Yeah, I think that's how
I do. I remember that game.
I've never seen a team sport where a whole team was just like, check please, in the middle of a playoff game. I mean, it was legit.
I was like, the Bucks for sure did that to secure Jameis Winston in the second half.
Well, that's true. But that wasn't like game 7 of Eastern Conference semis, I think it was. It was like they were just like, check please, we don't give a fuck, you know, fuck you LeBron too. There was a little bit of that too. It was kind of amazing.
I remember that.
Forget that game.
I feel like I don't have to plug your stuff, but in case you don't know, please can you give the hyper vanity URL for your projected starter series, Greg?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about my other podcast. That's what I'm going that's what gets me some extra dollars in the pocket is the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, which is with my friend who's a comedian, Anthony Jeselnik. So if if you hadn't heard of that one, people like it. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I never understand why people listen to it, but people like it and you should listen to it.
Yeah. So listen to...
That was a bad sell. I'm not good at selling.
It's okay. We're not that great at it either, which is why we don't have.
But he's funny. He's funny as shit. He is funny as shit. Yeah, funny. And I'm doing something really weird. You don't even know about this, Adam. Me and this my buddy Glenn Clark are like doing a very beta testing Grand Slam tennis podcast.
Look at this guy.
It's on YouTube. Like, we got like 20 subscribers. So we're gonna get it cleaned up eventually if we keep doing it. We're just kind of working out the kinks now, but only slams. Check it out on YouTube. Subscribe.
There you go. Are you guys do you guys address like the whole Naomi withdrawing thing?
That was our whole top of the last one. We've done two of them so far. We're going to do a couple more during the French. It's just for fun. Just like, let's do something just for fun. Yeah.
Check out Greg's work. RSVP podcast with Anthony Jeselnik, the Grand Slam on YouTube.
I mean, you just called it RSVP. It's so disrespectful. That's like returning a letter. And then you said the Grand Slam. It was only slams. See, it's like
like only fans, but with
like
slams.
Only fans, but only slams. We're just gonna do it for the 2 weeks of the Grand Slams, you know, which is 8 weeks a year. Like, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
He's like RSVP. Adam.
When Catherine Terrell was on the show, she works for the Atlantic, and I said that she worked for the Athletic. No, she works for the Athletic. I think, and I said she works for the Atlantic. Yeah, I'm a mess.
I mean, Adam's gonna like ring me out emotionally, having me talking about Chris for 15 minutes, and then he's like, "Hey, go check out RSVP." Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on, Matt. We might try to get you back on when there's actually something to talk about training.
No, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it during camp. Let's do it during camp.
And there's storylines that happen during camp, and I can almost guarantee you, like, if there's like training camp stories where like, oh, looks like Taysom Hill's winning the quarterback battle, would not be surprised.
Oh my gosh. I know. I've already seen them pop up. Your boy Nick is
let's not say that, but yeah. Just saying. But thank you, Greg, for coming on. We appreciate you. With that, we're out.
Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.